This podcast is brought to you by Luca Mele, front-end architecture, team leadership, and technical consulting. Over 16 years of experience turning complex challenges into simple, effective solutions. Learn more at lucamele.ch.
Have you ever worked on a project where your front-end team and your back-end team felt like they were speaking two entirely different languages, like literally and figuratively?
Oh, yeah. That is probably one of the most common friction points in software development right now.
Right. You have these two highly specialized teams, but the actual space between them, that integration point, it just becomes this massive bottleneck.
Yeah, a silent bottleneck that just eats up all your productivity.
Exactly. So that's our mission for today's deep dive. We are jumping into modern software architecture, specifically looking at the back end for front end pattern, or, you know, the BFF.
Right, the infamous BFF.
And we're pulling a lot of this from software engineer Luca Mele's work, specifically his blog post called Killing the Java BFF, along with some of his broader engineering guidelines.
That's a really fascinating take.
It is, because we want to unpack whether small teams should they just ditch their Java BFFs entirely and move to a unified full-stack Next.js approach?
Which is a proposition that definitely challenges a lot of deeply held enterprise assumptions, I mean.
Oh, for sure.
But we're going to break down both sides, the operational mechanics of consolidating your stack, and also when Java is actually still the absolute right choice. Because architecture is all about trade-offs, right? There are no silver bullets.
No silver bullets at all. And I think we'll see how these technical choices reflect some surprisingly philosophical coding principles along the way, too.
Definitely.
So just to make sure we're all on the same baseline here before we get into the weeds, how is Mele defining a BFF? Because I feel like that term gets thrown around a lot.
Yeah, it does. So Sam Newman actually coined the term originally.
Okay.
And the core idea is that a BFF acts as an orchestrator that's customized for one specific user interface.
So it's not doing the heavy lifting.
Exactly. It shouldn't hold complex core business logic. That stuff belongs way deeper in your microservices.
Yeah.
Its job is really just to fetch raw data from those different services, reshape it, maybe handle like authentication or session management, and then serve a nice clean JSON package directly to the client, whether that's a React web app or, you know, a mobile app.
So it's kind of like a sous chef in a restaurant.
Oh, like it, yeah.
Like if the front end UI is the head chef plating the final dish, the BFF is the sous chef doing all the running around the kitchen.
Exactly.
Grabbing chopped veggies from the user profile microservice, the cooked protein from the billing microservice, and prepping it perfectly so the head chef just focuses on presentation.
That captures the dynamic perfectly. And historically, if you look at a typical small Scrum team, maybe a 6 to 8 people.
Yeah, standard size.
You'd frequently see a React front end paired with a Java Spring Boot BFF. It was just the designated meeting point. The back end devs wrote Java, the front end devs wrote JavaScript, and they met at the BFF.
But Millie's article is basically asking, does maintaining two entirely different ecosystems for one product even make sense anymore? So let's start with the technical friction. He points out that keeping a Java backend and a TypeScript frontend synchronized leads to massive schema drift and lots of bugs.
Oh, totally.
But wait, my immediate reaction to that is, haven't we had code generation tools for like a decade? What about OpenAPI or Swagger? Mm. Shouldn't syncing types just be a solved problem by now?
Well, yeah, on paper, code generation solves the problem completely.
But not in practice.
Not at all. The reality of a living, breathing CI/CD pipeline is just way messier. It's not that the tools don't work. It's the human element, the sequence of events.
Give me an example.
So imagine a developer renames a data transfer object on the Java side.
Okay.
They push the code. But maybe they forget to manually run the Swagger generation script locally. Or maybe your automated pipeline generates the front-end client asynchronously, like after the pull request merges.
Ah, so you end up in this weird limbo state.
Exactly. The Java backend expects the new field name, but the generated TypeScript client the frontend is using it still relies on the old cached schema.
Wow, so that's how bugs just slip straight into production.
Right, because the two systems aren't actually communicating in real time. They're communicating through a static contract that can easily fall out of sync by, like, a few minutes or a missed command.
That sounds incredibly frustrating. So what's the alternative with a unified Next.js and TypeScript stack?
Well, in that unified stack, you aren't generating a translation of the types at all. You just share the exact same file.
Wait, literally the same file?
Literally. You define the type interface exactly once. The server-side API route and the client-side React component import that single TypeScript file.
Oh, that's elegant.
So if a backend developer changes a property name, the TypeScript compiler instantly throws an error on the front-end component that was using it.
Because it's all in the same environment.
Exactly. There's no generation step, no Swagger synchronization. That entire category of schema drift bugs is just, it's eradicated at compile time.
Okay. Consolidating the stack clearly solves the type checking lag. But software isn't just about catching errors in a pipeline, you know? It's about team velocity.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about team resilience, like that classic, slightly morbid concept of the bus factor.
Yes.
Yeah.
How many people need to get hit by a bus before the project stalls?
Exactly. Or, you know, just get the flu. If you have a split stack and your primary Java developer gets sick, your React developers are essentially paralyzed if they need an API change, right?
Yeah, that siloing effect is really profound, especially in small teams. Because back-end developers usually won't touch the React code, and front-end developers generally aren't comfortable modifying a Spring Boot app.
Right.
So a feature that really should take one day ends up taking three.
Because of the handoffs.
Precisely. The front-end dev realizes they need a new field. Mm. They write up a request. They negotiate the contract with the back-end dev. Then they have to wait for the Java code to be written, reviewed, and deployed.
And only then can they actually finish the UI.
Right.
Mila makes a pretty bold claim in the article. He says, three strong, full-stack TypeScript developers can effectively replace four siloed developers, like two back-end and two front-end.
Yeah, he does.
Are full-stack developers just inherently faster, or is that a structural advantage?
It's almost entirely structural. It's about removing those handoff bottlenecks we just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
When your BFF is just a thin routing layer in Next.js, any developer on the team can trace a feature from the database query all the way to the CSS button on the screen.
Because it's all TypeScript.
Exactly. The throughput increases simply because nobody is sitting around waiting for another department to unblock them.
That makes a lot of sense. So we've removed the human bottleneck. Let's look at the infrastructure overhead next, because keeping two ecosystems running sounds exhausting.
Oh, the operational tax is arguably the heaviest burden for a small team. When you split the stack, you aren't just writing two languages. You're managing two continuous integration pipelines.
Ugh.
You have two base Docker images to maintain and secure. You're juggling NPM for the front end alongside, like Maven or Gradle for the back end.
And you're tracking two completely different sets of security vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
Like every time a new CVE drops for a Spring Boot dependency, someone has to make a Jira ticket. Meanwhile, you're also constantly updating React packages.
Two testing frameworks.
Two
linters.
It's double the work just to keep the lights on.
But consolidating under Nectar.js cuts that operational surface area in half. You have one package.json, one Docker file, a unified way to write tests.
So when you onboard a new dev, they only have to learn one ecosystem to actually be productive.
Exactly.
But does combining these layers actually save money when it comes to deployment? I was looking at the hardware numbers Mailer provided for cloud deployment, and the difference in memory consumption is pretty staggering.
It really is. The hardware footprint between Java and Node.js is just fundamentally different by design.
How so?
Well, the Java Virtual Machine, the JVM, it carries a massive memory overhead just to initialize.
Just to start up.
Yeah. It comes from class loading, where it loads all the potential blueprints for the application into memory, plus metadata for garbage collection and warming up the just-in-time compiler.
So what does that look like in practice?
It means a standard Spring Boot application could consume 200 to 400 megabytes of memory while sitting completely idle, doing absolutely nothing.
Wow. Wait, really? 400 megabytes to do nothing?
Yep. Whereas an idle Node.js server might sit at like 30 to 50 megabytes.
That's a huge difference.
And in modern cloud deployments, especially with Kubernetes or serverless functions, you pay for what you provision. Memory footprint translates directly into your monthly AWS or Azure bill.
Okay, let's break down the execution models then, because memory is only half the story, right?
Yeah.
Melee argues that Node.js is actually structurally better suited for the kind of work a BFF does anyway.
He does, yeah.
For anyone who hasn't looked under the hood of Node recently, can you contrast how its event loop handles waiting versus Java's traditional thread model?
Sure. Let's use a restaurant analogy again.
Okay, I like those.
So traditional Java architecture uses a thread per request model. Think of a thread as a waiter. A customer sits down, and a dedicated waiter takes their order.
Got it.
But if the kitchen is slow, which in software means waiting on I.O., like querying a database or calling an external microservice, that waiter just stands at the table doing nothing until the food is ready.
They're just blocked.
Completely blocked.
Huh.
So if you get 100 customers, you need 100 waiters.
Yeah.
Which requires a massive amount of memory.
And a BFS spends almost all of its time waiting, right? It asks a microservice for data and then just waits for the JSON response.
Exactly. Now, Node.js, conversely, uses a single-threaded event loop. So you have one highly efficient waiter.
Just one?
Just one. They take table one's order, hand it to the kitchen, and instead of waiting, they immediately walk over and take table two's order.
Oh, I see.
When the kitchen finishes table one's food, they ring a bell that's an event, and the waiter delivers it. Because a BFF is so heavily I/O bound, the event loop handles thousands of concurrent requests incredibly efficiently without needing the overhead of 1,000 idle waiters.
That's brilliant. And this shift toward a leaner, more efficient architecture ties really beautifully into Luca Mele's broader coding philosophies, too.
It really does.
In his best practices guidelines, he heavily emphasizes simplicity, eradicating unnecessary complexity. He actually cites the rule of least power.
Yes. That is a principle that actively prevents over-engineering.
Right.
The rule dictates that you should always use the least powerful language or tool suitable for the result you need. Start with HTML.
Keep it simple.
Right. If HTML can't accomplish a goal, use CSS. Only when CSS falls short do you introduce standard JavaScript. And only when the interactivity really demands it do you reach for a heavy framework like React.
It's like trying to fix a leak with duct tape before you demolish the entire wall, or using a simple handsaw to cut a piece of plywood. You don't drag a massive gas-powered chainsaw into your living room unless the handsaw absolutely cannot get through the wood. The chainsaw is more powerful, obviously, but the mess, the danger, the maintenance, it's just not worth it for a simple cut.
That's a great way to put it. And that principle of avoiding the chainsaw connects directly to his thoughts on code duplication, too.
Yeah.
Specifically, the tension between DRY, don't repeat yourself, and Yeganai, you aren't going to need it.
I found his take on this so fascinating because DRY is drilled into developers from day one, right? Never duplicate things.
Oh, yeah, it's like the golden rule.
But Maisel points out this massive misconception. He says DRY doesn't mean don't repeat the code. It means don't repeat the logic.
And that distinction completely dictates how software evolves. Mm-hmm. Imagine you have two different pages fetching user data. One page needs it to calculate billing, and the other needs it to display a public profile.
Okay.
The code to fetch the data might look identical today. So the instinct is to DRY it up, abstract it into one shared utility function.
But the logic, the actual business reason for that data existing, is completely different.
Exactly. When the billing department inevitably asks for more complex data fields later on, you now have to modify a shared function that the profile page also relies on.
Oh, right. You've created a dependency where one shouldn't exist.
Yes. Premature abstraction kills more code bases than duplication ever will. Mele's philosophy is to keep things duplicated until the business logic definitively demands they be merged. Yaeji and I, you aren't going to need that abstraction yet.
So how does that apply to the macro level architecture of the BFFs?
It means you don't build a complex, separated Java BFF ecosystem.
Yeah.
Just because you think you might need heavy enterprise grade backend features a year from now.
You wait until you actually need them.
Right. You keep the stack unified, simple, and in Next.js until you hit a wall that Next.js genuinely cannot climb. You defer the complexity.
Okay. I'm going to play devil's advocate here. If Node is this incredibly efficient waiter, and unifying the stack slashes operational overhead, and YG&I tells us to avoid complex ecosystems, why hasn't every major bank or healthcare provider on Earth killed their Java BFFs? I mean, Java is still the backbone of enterprise software.
And that dominance is deeply justified. The Next.js unified stack is brilliant for a specific profile of application, but it's not universally superior. Java has strict safety guarantees that TypeScript fundamentally cannot replicate.
Okay, let's break that down, because TypeScript literally has the word type in the name. What makes Java's type safety stricter?
It comes down to structural versus nominal typing.
Okay.
TypeScript uses structural typing. Think of it like this. If it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, TypeScript says, cool, it's a duck.
Makes sense.
But more importantly, that typing vanishes at runtime. Once the code compiles to JavaScript, all those safety checks just disappear.
Wait, they just vanish?
Yeah, they're only there during development. And Java uses nominal typing.
So not a duck.
Well, it doesn't matter if it walks and quacks like a duck. It is only a duck if it possesses a certified birth certificate that explicitly declares its class as duck.
Ah, okay.
And furthermore, Java has checked exceptions and compile time guarantees that actually persist. If you are building software that processes financial transactions or handles critical healthcare data, Java's rigidity catches catastrophic edge case bugs before they ever reach production.
So for safety-critical systems, you want the bureaucrat demanding the birth certificate, not the structural guesswork.
Exactly.
What about performance limitations? We praise the node waiter for being highly efficient at taking orders, but what if the BFF actually has to do heavy lifting? Like, what if it's crunching massive aggregations of data or doing complex encryption before sending it to the client?
That is where the single-threaded event loop becomes a massive liability.
True.
Oh, yeah. If our single waiter suddenly has to stop taking orders and cook a complex 5-course meal right at table one, all the other tables are ignored. Node.js blocks the event loop on heavy CPU tasks. Meanwhile, Java, with its highly optimized multi-threading model and just-in-time compiler, handles heavy computational workloads flawlessly. You can spin up dedicated threads to crunch data without pausing the rest of the application.
So if your app requires raw computational muscle, Java still absolutely wears the crown.
Without a doubt. And beyond the code, there's just the reality of enterprise momentum. Companies have massive investments in tested, reliable Java infrastructure. They rely heavily on deep ecosystems like Spring Security. You don't tear down a stable architecture just to chase a new paradigm.
Right. You don't rewrite just to rewrite.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Never rewrite might be an overly dogmatic rule,
yeah.
But never rewrite without a compelling, measurable business reason is just foundational engineering. Hmm. If you have a deep bench of talented Java developers, forcing them into a Next.js paradigm might actually slow you down.
So let's bring this all down to execution. Imagine you're listening to this and you lead a small team. You've looked at the metrics. Your BFF is primarily doing simple IO-heavy proxy work. You're suffering from schema drift, your cloud bills are high, and you want to reap the benefits of unifying under Next.js and TypeScript. How do you actually pull this off safely? Because you clearly don't just delete the Java repo on a Friday afternoon and hope for the best.
Oh, please don't do that. A big bang rewrite is the most dangerous path you can take.
Burning the boats, so to speak.
Exactly. But the second most dangerous path is a half migration, where you move a few endpoints, lose momentum, and suddenly you're leaving the team supporting three ecosystems instead of two.
The worst of both worlds.
The strategy Melee and others advocate for is the strangler fig pattern.
Which is named after the vine, right? The one that grows around a host tree, slowly overtakes it, and eventually replaces the original structure entirely.
That's the one.
So how does that translate to our servers?
You introduce Next.js as a reverse proxy sitting directly in front of your existing Java BFF.
Yeah.
On day one, Next.js does zero actual work. It simply catches the incoming traffic from the front end and passes it straight through to Java.
Okay, so it's just a pass-through.
Right. Then you select a single endpoint. Ideally, you pick the simplest one or maybe the one that changes the most frequently and causes the most friction. And you rewrite just that one route in TypeScript within Next.js.
And then you just route the front end to the new Next.js endpoint.
Not yet. You utilize a technique called shadow mode first.
Mm-hmm.
You configure the system so that when a user requests that data, the request is sent to both the old Java endpoint and the new Next.js endpoint simultaneously.
Oh, wow.
The user only ever receives the response from the trusted Java backend. But behind the scenes, you compare the Next.js output to the Java output.
You're running a silent real-world test against live production data. That's incredibly smart.
It is. And only when the Next.js endpoint perfectly matches the Java endpoint for like thousands of requests only, then do you flip the switch and let Next.js actually serve the user.
And you just systematically strangle the old service endpoint by endpoint.
Exactly. It completely de-risks the architecture shift. Because if you hit an endpoint that requires heavy CPU processing and you realize Node is choking well, you still have the Java architecture in place. You haven't burned the boats.
You can just leave that one in Java if you have to.
Precisely. It allows your architecture to evolve safely based on empirical evidence rather than just theoretical assumptions.
Well, we have covered some serious architectural ground today.
We really have.
We examined how the traditional Java BFF boundary, while historically the standard, can create massive operational drag for smaller teams through schema drift and cross-team bottlenecks.
And we saw how a unified Next.js stack eliminates those handoffs, reduces the infrastructure complexity, and really leverages the node event loop for incredible I/O efficiency.
We also explored how these choices reflect core philosophies, right? Like the rule of least power and avoiding premature abstraction with YAG.
But we also acknowledged that Java remains unmatched for strict nominal type safety and heavy multi-threaded computational workloads.
It is entirely about matching the architecture to your specific business constraints. Questioning whether the patterns that worked for an enterprise 5 years ago are still the right fit for your agile team today.
Exactly.
Which leaves us with a pretty provocative trajectory to consider. If the tooling continues to unify the stack so seamlessly, like if frameworks like Next.js keep blurring the boundary between server and client and type safety stretches effortlessly from the database schema all the way to the UI button a user clicks.
Yeah.
Will the traditional titles of front-end developer and back-end developer completely disappear in the next decade? Are we rapidly moving toward a world where the industry only hires product developers?
That is a fascinating question.
Take a moment this week to look at your own team's architecture with fresh eyes. You might just find a chainsaw where a handsaw would do. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.